News. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting. The U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis says he has been given expanded authority to use military troops to protect border agents at the southwestern border. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the Pentagon.
The new authorities from the White House come with the Trump administration believing the migrant caravans pose a danger to Border Patrol personnel.
We have identified over 500 criminals.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen yesterday while touring the border. Mattis says he'll only exercise the new authority if Nielsen makes a specific request. He says the troops could use lethal force if necessary and could also temporarily detain migrants if there's violence.
I would put it in terms of minutes.
Insisting to reporters here the troops will not do law enforcement and do not have arrest authority.
The United States said Wednesday it will scale back military exercises with South Korea next year, so the exercises are not a hindrance to diplomacy over ending North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Mattis said the exercises will be reduced in scope in 2019. North Korea has frequently objected to the exercises, viewing them as a threat to its existence as a nation. Interpol's General Assembly voted Wednesday to make South Korea's Kim Jong-un its new president. Kim had been serving as the International Crime Fighting Organization's acting president and will serve a 2-year term. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had strongly endorsed him. The Kremlin accused the opposition to the Russian candidate, who was a front-runner in the vote, of participating in election interference. Kim replaces China's Meng Hongwei, who had been held in his native country on allegations of bribes. This is VOA News. A top Israeli cabinet minister says President Trump is wasting his time trying to push for an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan. Justice Minister Ayelet Shaked says that reaching peace is currently impossible and that Trump should focus his energy elsewhere until the Palestinians are ready to compromise. The U.S. is preparing to release its long-anticipated Mideast peace plan, which Trump calls the, quote, deal of the century. Tens of thousands of children are likely to have perished as the violence in Yemen goes on. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Save the Children say an estimated 85,000 children under five may have died of hunger and disease since the outbreak of Yemen's civil war in 2015. What the group says is a conservative estimate is based on average mortality rates for severe acute malnutrition, which the UN says has afflicted more than 1.3 million children since the war began. The war and a Saudi-led blockade have created the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with more than 8 million people at risk of starvation.
UN diplomat Martin Griffiths is in Yemen to prepare for peace talks after fresh fighting erupted in the key port city of Hodeida. He was scheduled to meet with Iran-aligned Houthi officials in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in an attempt to persuade them and the Saudi-backed Yemeni government to begin negotiations by year's end. Cameroon's military says it has freed 9 students kidnapped this week from a school in one of the country's restive English-speaking regions. Correspondent Moki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from the capital Yaounde.
The military killed several gunmen Wednesday in an operation that freed 9 kidnapped students and their teacher. Armed men responsible for the abduction are on the run. The teacher was wounded in the rescue. Gunmen kidnapped the students and their teacher Tuesday evening from Lord's bilingual school in Kumba, a city in Cameroon's southwest region. The kidnapping comes 3 weeks after gunmen kidnapped and then released 79 students and 3 staff from a school in the neighboring northwest region.
A U.S. government agency said Wednesday abortion rates among American women of all ages fell to a decade low in 2015. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said the most recent year, 2015, for which data is available, show the abortion rate was about 12 abortions per 1,000 women aged 15 to 44. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world, around the clock, at voanews.com. I'm Christopher Cruz, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC opposition coalition candidate returned home yesterday as official campaigning kicks off today, Thursday.
We'll campaign to win the election. We'll campaign to tell the people of Congo that Mr. Tshadari, he wants to follow the legacy of Mr. Kabila, which is disaster.
Martin Fayulu is the candidate for Congo's opposition coalition parties. Kenya and Mozambique have signed a visa waiver agreement between their two countries. And we'll talk with the Liberian journalist Rodney Sear about his new book, Journalist on Trial. And China assures Zambia's government it will construct a modern international conference center in Lusaka.
And I must emphasize that this is not a loan but a grant. But it tells you that probably there was a reconsideration and a decision has been reached again that, look, the grant that was given is firmly assured.
Amos Chanda is special assistant to Zambian President Edgar Lungu on press and public relations. And South Sudan appeals to petroleum companies to invest in South Sudan. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The opposition coalition candidate in the Democratic Republic of Congo says he believes the Congolese people will vote for him because they want change. Martin Fayulu says he is the only candidate who can bring about peace and security, infrastructure development, education, and employment to Congo. Congolese will vote on December 23rd to choose a successor to outgoing President Joseph Kabila. Fayulu was elected in Geneva a week ago by four opposition parties, and yesterday, Wednesday, he returned to Kinshasa in time for today's official beginning of campaigning.
The reception was wonderful. The Congolese came to greet me at the airport and all along the road to the place that I had to give the speech. You had a mass of humanity. People came, but the policemen wanted to disturb the joys of Congolese. Every 200 meters, they just used the tear gas to push people away to my car. But the people of Kinshasa, they were determined to receive me.
You know, Mr. Fayulu, campaigning officially begins today. What are your plans? Are you starting your campaigning today?
No, I cannot start my campaign today because, you know, Mr. Nanga distracted us for that issue of a voting machine, the issue of electoral list. And today we have agreed to have a common candidate, which is me, and the common candidate has a mandate to request for the credible and the fair election, meaning that we want election with the ballot paper, as mentioned in the electoral law and in the electoral calendar.
Elections are just next month. The opposition keeps talking about this voting machine. Do you think that's the right thing to do?
I don't know if anybody in any country can agree to go to the election by not doing what is written by the law. We have an electoral calendar, but those two legal documents you can read, go through, and they come over and over. And there is no place, no page where it's written that we will use the voting machine. And we are talking that this is the illegal issue. Nobody can today say that because you are Congolese and you have to breach the law. What we are saying that is the law is tough, but is clear, and we have to respect it. And also, using those machines, this is new technology. The Congolese don't know this technology. The level of illiterate in this country is so high. How can those people in the villages, they will use that voting machine? There is no way. And one of our colleagues by the name Shekumba, he also is a candidate. He has demonstrated that this machine is the machine for cheating. Now, we'll campaign to win the election. We'll campaign to tell the people of Congo that Mr. Tshadari, as he said himself, he wants to follow the legacy of Mr. Kabila, which is disaster. And nobody can accept that the Congo continue to go deeply into a chaos. You know, we need today to have a state of law. One, we need today or tomorrow to have a peace and security in this country. We need a good education for our kids. We need employment. We need the road. We need infrastructure. And I think I'm today the only capable guy to do that, because giving my experience, giving my program, I think we can achieve wonders while we'll be in the office.
Mr. Fayulu, the last time we spoke with you, you had just been elected to represent the coalition, but it seems that there is a problem within the coalition. Two important members of the coalition have not yet declared their support for you. Have you been able to get everybody together as the candidate?
The important members of coalition are the people of Congo. We have to forget what happened, but today we should be focused on having fair and a credible election without the voting machine to implement our program to alleviate the poverty of the people of Congo, to reduce or to relieve the issue of security, and also to put this country on the track for state of law.
Martin Fayulu is the presidential candidate of the coalition of opposition parties in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Kenya and Mozambique have signed a visa waiver agreement for their two countries. Speaking after holding bilateral talks at State House in Nairobi, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and his Mozambican counterpart, Felipe Nyusi, said the move will promote trade between the two countries. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the two heads of state also agree on strengthening business and investment ties between their two countries.
Speaking in Nairobi after meeting with Mozambique's President Filipe Nyusi, President Kenyatta championed for need to sustain the use of blue economy resources to boost trade between the two countries. Mr. Kenyatta says port cities Mombasa and Maputo will work closely together to enhance Kenya's trade relations with Mozambique.
We have also agreed that we together will champion the sustainable use of our blue economy resources, and we believe this will go a long way to accelerating economic growth and development in our countries. Our two port cities, especially namely Maputo and Mombasa, form an integral part of our trade relations, and we're therefore very happy, Mr. President, that you will have an opportunity to tour Mombasa Port, and I encourage our relevant authorities to work much closer together to see how we can partner and develop our port facilities as a sure way of improving trade linkages between our two countries.
On the other hand, Mozambique's President Felipe Nyusi welcomed the visa waiver memorandum of understanding, saying it will help boost both countries' economies.
We welcome the visa waiver memorandum of understanding. For those who followed the visit of President Kenyatta to Mozambique, will understand that this decision was made during the business forum, because we said if we are to facilitate business, let's make decisions, and we announced that we are going to waiver these visas. And we are very glad that this is now materializing by the signing of the memorandum of understanding.
Kenya has also embarked on developing extractive industries through government-to-government agreement. President Uhuru Kenyatta said Kenya is also exploring on aviation training sectors that will see two countries work together to enhance tourism sector.
Kenya has noted the tremendous progress that has been made in the growth of gas, coal and oil exploration in Mozambique. And Kenya seeks to learn from Mozambique's best practices, including transfer of technology, as we embark on developing our own extractive industry. And indeed, one of the proposals that we are considering is the importation of liquefied gas and coal from Mozambique starting next year through a government-to-government agreement. We are also exploring the existing potential in the aviation sector between our two countries that is yet to be fully exploited and which would enhance greatly our tourism and trade ties.
Mozambique will be among the countries who will be attending the first global conference on the sustainable blue economy that will take place in Mombasa, Kenya from Monday 26th November this year. President Uhuru Kenyatta has been holding bilateral talks with various heads of state as Kenyans await the benefits of these talks. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 22nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. A spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu says Zambia is a pragmatic member of the international community that engages with its partners on the basis of mutual understanding. Amos Chanda, the special assistant to President Lungu on press and public relations, says Zambia is not trying to play the West against China or vice versa. His comments came as Zambia announced earlier this week that China has assured the Zambian government that it will construct a modern international conference center to host the 2022 African Union Summit. Chanda said the center will be paid for through a $30 million grant from China.
The assurance came from a special message delivered by the Chinese ambassador, who had been constituted as a special envoy for purposes of this delivery, that they had been processing what Zambia's entitlements are arising from the September 2018 FOCAC summit, which was held in China. Among the things that China is advancing to Zambia, mainly grants and concessional loans, one of the primary considerations was the conference facilities for 2022 African Union Summit. The grant is something in excess of $30 million.
So, Amos, I thought this was a done deal. Did the Chinese threaten to pull out because of all the uproar over the so-called Chinese loans to your government?
If you read between the lines, the decision was made, but the fact that President Xi Jinping himself would put it in a letter and constitute a special envoy to come and assure the Zambian government, it does appear that some consideration was being done. I must emphasize that this is not a loan but a grant. But it tells you that probably there was a reconsideration and a decision has been reached again that, look, the grant that was given is firmly assured. But the reassurance coming, not just verbally, but in a written diplomatic note from President Xi Jinping of China to President Lungu of Zambia. And also, given the amount of propaganda and falsehoods that have gone out in recent months, you respect that the two governments were reconsidering certain aspects of cooperation, but they have arrived at the same conclusion that the exaggerated debt situation with China is completely not true, based on propaganda, because Zambia owes just slightly about $2.1 billion debt to China. And some of the monies are grants to tell those who are spreading propaganda that our cooperation is a well-informed one. Both countries are aware of the need to remain within acceptable, sustainable debt limits. So China is not lending to Zambia irresponsibly. Zambia is not contracting Chinese debt irresponsibly.
Amos, did you say that the $30 million is a grant?
Yes.
Or is a loan?
It's a grant.
I'm asking this question because is it true that a loan is not repayable? Because this is why people are saying if this
it's
is a loan, then
false.
That's too much debt.
Yes, we owe China debt, but I can tell you that it's $2.8 billion, somewhere within that range. There is no grant that is repayable. A grant is simply a grant.
This is why people are saying, well, did Zambia, did your government mortgage certain resources of the country?
The special envoy, the Chinese ambassador, communicated his frustration that the falsehoods, blatant lies that a country has been mortgaged. There is not a single state-owned enterprise, not a single national asset that has been mortgaged to China. ZESCO, the power utility, is pretty much in the hands of the government. Zafico, the forestry company, is 100% in the hands of the government. The national broadcaster is 100% in the hands of the government. It is not mortgaged. It's total rubbish, absolute misinformation that is going on. The Zambian government is responsible enough and cannot mortgage any of the state assets for a debt of $2.1 billion.
Amos Chanda is special assistant to Zambian President Edgar Lungu on press and public relations. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. South Sudan is appealing to petroleum companies worldwide to invest in its oil fields. Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Low Gatkuov told a three-day oil and gas conference in Juba that the recent peace deal provides an opportunity for investors to get involved in the industry. Waike Simon Wudu reports.
Representatives of at least 400 oil, gas, and energy companies started their conference in Juba. Gatkuov appealed to them to invest in South Sudan's oil sector.
South Sudan is a place to invest, and we are open for investment. And that's why we are aggressively informing the whole world that the potentials are very high here in the Republic of South Sudan. NALPAT is there to team up with you, exchange information with NALPAT, and the government will be there supporting them, backing them, and all the partners who will be coming. We will be giving you the best service that you can have.
NILPET stands for Nile Petroleum Corporation. Gatkuov says South Sudan is working to increase its oil production now that the peace deal has been finalized. He says his government is working with the oil companies to revive oil fields affected by fighting in the former unity state. The petroleum minister says investors should take advantage of and exploit oil blocks in the Upper Nile region.
So Sudan has a lot of blocks that are empty. We have B1 and B2. We have E1 and E2. They are also available. We have A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6. They are available. And there are other blocks that are not mapped yet.
Oil revenues contribute to 98% of South Sudan's economy. In 2011, the country produced 350,000 barrels of crude per day. But production has gone down since then due to insecurity in the oil fields. Gatkuov says the September 12 peace agreement provides an opportunity for his country to boost its oil production.
For me, resumption is our number one priority. DPOC is producing 130,000 barrels a day. We want to go back to 270,000 barrels a day.
DPOC stands for Dara Petroleum Operating Company, and GPOC stands for Greater Pioneer Operating Company. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, says his government is working to improve the country's business environment. Guy is calling on the petroleum ministry and oil companies to protect the environment in the oil fields.
So let us be mindful about the social corporate. Let us be mindful about the services to those communities. Let us be mindful about how to protect their environment.
This is the second time South Sudan is hosting an oil and a gas conference in 2 years. For VOA News, I'm Waike Simon Wudu in Juba.
A Liberian journalist and author is urging Liberians to be more involved in the fight against corruption in their country. Rodney Sie, publisher of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading newspaper, says Liberians should capitalize on the investigative stories that are being published in their local newspapers about corruption and demand answers from their government. Sie is the author of a new book, Journalist on Trial. I caught up with him this week at a book signing and town hall event in Silver Spring, the U.S. state of Maryland. He explains to me why he decided to write his book.
I wrote this book because a lot of things that I've done in the last few years have been misinterpreted. Virtually every story that I've written, I've been on trial for. I mean, the government accused me of either being opposition or against them. And I think it's unfair. So I thought that I needed to set the record straight and detail a lot of the things that we covered in the last decade and plus.
Rodney, what do you see as the main point of disagreement between you, the local Liberian journalist, and governments of Liberia? I'm saying government because I'm not just talking about the current government of President George Weah.
I think governments are afraid of being exposed. They're afraid of people telling them or relaying to the public the ills that is happening in the country. I think people feel threatened by the pen. They feel threatened by media. I think they feel like the media will expose everything they do. So the best thing they can do now is just attack attack.
You know, I asked the question because in one of my interviews with the Minister of Information, Eugene Nambe, he remarked that the current government is a champion of press freedom in Liberia.
Right.
But he said, James, look at Front Page Africa. Since we took over, they've never written any positive article about this government. What's your reaction?
Well, we've written a lot of things about the government. When they do positive things, when they do good things, we publish it. But we cannot be the mouthpiece for the government. I think they see a lot of digging up stuff we do, like, for example, the missing $25 million that nobody knows how we will spend, how we'll spend it. And these things are things that people want to know about. So we report about these things. So for them, these stories should be swept under the carpet. So that's their interpretation of we're not covering them favorably. And that's not our job. They have the New Liberian newspaper. They can do that. They have their people on Facebook attacking every day on the work we do. So that's their forum. Our forum is for Liberian people to tell them what's going on in the country.
You know, African journalists, Liberian journalists also included, you are on the front line of the fight against corruption. What do you think needs to be done in Liberia to magnify this fight?
I think Liberians can amplify what the media is reporting. I think some of the investigations we've done, we've laid the groundwork for things that are happening. We've laid the groundwork for the $16 billion missing Liberian dollar money. That can be kept in the news if people can keep talking about it and keep asking questions about it. We've had $25 billion U.S. dollars that was supposed to be put in the economy to map up as a mop-up exercise, and nobody knew how that money was expended. The Minister of Finance said he gave the money to people in Nikuru Town and Looking Town. We haven't seen a list of distribution, who got what, who received what. We don't know anything about it. And that's $25 million that can help poor people in the country. So this is the time for us as Liberians to really make sure that we put this thing into context.
So, Rodney, before I let you go, you mentor a lot of young journalists working with your paper. What's your biggest advice to them?
I would say perseverance. I think a lot of young people, they want to do well. They want to expose corruption. They want to tell good stories in Liberia. And a lot of things happen in Liberia. I mean, the issue of rape is very dominant. A lot of young people, young girls are being raped legally in the eyes of the government, because I know government officials who've raped young girls and impregnated them, and they're walking around like nothing happened. We've covered these stories. I think young people should look at those kind of stories as a way of cementing themselves in the established order of things in Liberia. I think once you do that, once you look at this issue of poverty, female genital mutilation, prostitution, those kind of stories also help address the issues in the country.
What do you tell them on the issue of ethics?
Well, I've been in the line of fire for a long time, and most times I've seen people, you know, crumble because they can't stand the heat. I've seen people take money from government officials not to carry stories. I've seen a lot of my colleagues, you know, damage their reputation because of that. I think we can really understand how these things unfold if we understand the context of which it is unfolding.
Rodney, thank you very much again, so nice, and congratulations.
Thanks, James.
Rodney Sia is publisher of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading newspaper. He spoke with me in Silver Spring, Maryland, the U.S. state of Maryland. That's it for this Thursday, November 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clottier and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.